Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black. And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
What are some of the factors that go into evaluating a business at any given time? We asked valuation expert Christopher Mercer.
It's one thing to say that your value is worth what a willing buyer and a willing seller will pay, but that same willing buyer and same willing seller won't pay the same thing in 2008 as they will in 2014, because in 2008 the world was full of uncertainty that caused financing to dry up and it was enormously difficult to sell. Some of your listeners that are listening to this need to think about the fact that they need to be thinking of an orderly transition of management and ownership, because when bad things happen to your company, you lose all flexibility in terms of ownership and management transition. So take care of those things now while you can.
Being in business is inherently risky. We all know that. But what are some of the most common mistakes that business owners make and their potential solutions? We asked for comments from attorney Mayar Ghassemian.
One of the important mistakes is not having a corporation or LLC or another form of entity that would limit their liability in case they get sued. I have seen a lot of companies that do this, and it's very prevalent in the construction industry. If they are around for a while and they don't have an entity, they are going to be sued sometimes, especially in construction. And what happens is, and they put their own personal properties in danger because they don't have an entity that would protect them.
What are some of the important factors that go into a professional business valuation? We asked expert Roger Winsby.
Valuation is really about a sense of future opportunities offset by the risks. And if you don't really think those through as it relates to each individual company, you won't really understand whether you might be above average on that multiple or below average, but it's going to be quite rare when you're right on the average or the median. It's quite an issue that comes up in terms of understanding, you know, the business and being able to document your findings. Valuation is really about future, and as much as, you know, people want to say, well, you know, here are my retained earnings and here's what I've done, and that's, you know, very important context, but ultimately if someone wants to buy the business, they're buying the future opportunity and weighing that against the future risks.
You know, a lot of business owners I talk to have an image in their mind of how they're going to put up a for sale sign and sell their business quickly and easily, get a big check and invest it. Here's a message from someone who's done it, Veronica Saldivar.
A lot of folks just think, I'm going to sell for X amount of dollars. And, you know, especially here for us in California and other similar states, taxes are a huge, huge consideration. It takes a big bite at your bottom line. I think also one of the other things is to consult with a CPA on that tax liability. When I was negotiating the sale of my business and negotiating the purchase and sale agreement, I also met several times with a tax attorney as well. He helped me draft the documents to prepare to make sure that I was going to fall under cap gains tax treatment, which was huge.
When you're undertaking a big project like exit planning, it's important to know that your advisors are using a specific process. Here's Leo Klein.
Our approach is to say, well, let's have initially that conversation. Let's do some initial fact finding on everything that is in, you know, that it needs to be looked at to develop that strategy. And once we sort of have developed the strategy, what we do is present that strategy in sort of in a team meeting to all the other advisors, and if needed, we bring in some new advisors if there are certain gaps. Here's the strategy, here are the facts. Let's discuss this and provide your input and suggestions. Let's refine the strategy based on your expertise, and then let's finalize it and then implement it. And then from my perspective, best practice is that sort of you repeat this process once a year until you conduct your exit.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
If you're going to grow your business, you've got to grow your sales. Here's Brad Leggett.
One of the key things we work with is performance management. How do you set targets? How do you get a sales team to perform? Because in about roughly half the companies we go into, there aren't formal sales targets in place. And that can be very demotivational to a sales team because they don't know where they're expected to perform to. You often have a very frustrated CEO or head of sales that says, well, the team's not doing well, but they haven't articulated what that target is. And our approach is you work with the sales team to set targets. I mean, the first piece of advice I've got is get a sales target that's written down and put it in front of everybody. That's step one.
Okay.
At least have that. But it's much better to set targets with the sales team's involvement. So sit down, and you don't want to walk into this meeting with a salesperson without some idea of the sales target. You'll have an idea of where it should be. Let's talk about where we think we can get to this year and what our target is.
What are some of the key things that a buyer looks for when they're buying a business? We asked a gentleman who's bought a lot of businesses, Ace Chapman, for his ideas.
The two things that we focus on when either we buy a business outright or we go in and invest in a business is we want the operations really to kind of be everything to be there. What we add on top of that is two things. Most people have not spent a lot of time investing or building out their marketing funnel. And the second part of that is having almost like a franchise-like operations manual that allows the person to come in and feel really comfortable that they're going to be able to run the business and take over from where you are. You want to stand out and have those kind of extras that just make it an easy investment for the buyer.
Technology is here to stay, and having a technology plan is becoming very important. Here's expert Jim Blue.
And a lot of people have a business plan, but they don't have a technology plan. What type of equipment do I need? What type of services that I need? A large percentage of my time is helping people brush up on basic computer skills. I help them select the right equipment, programs, and services, really based on their individual needs. And anytime something new comes out, I'm getting phone calls and emails in terms of whether they should upgrade, whether they should get a new product. You know, the name of the game now is setting up a home office. Most people have some type of technology in their home. There's a big difference between using it for personal use and for using it for business use. And I have to really separate that based on how much time someone's going to be spending in their office and what they do for a living.
What are some of the trends because of the global economy? We asked international law expert Kenneth August.
You mentioned manufacturing. That's a perfect example of where the thinking today is very different from where it was even 5 years ago. And by that I mean traditionally a company might look at outsourcing their manufacturing, let's say to China as an example, in order to lower their cost of production.
Mm-hmm.
But really, with the consumer markets moving into those countries where they were outsourcing, it makes a lot more sense today to look not at a unilateral outsourcing manufacturing play, but how can you develop a revenue base and profitability in that local market? And maybe instead of doing all your outsourcing in China, you also have manufacturing in Eastern Europe or in Latin America, and they become concentric circles of new markets that you can sell your products and services into.
Most people think of planning for their death when they visit with an estate planning attorney, but here's another viewpoint from estate planning attorney Michael Wittick.
I tell people all the time, you probably came to me to plan for your death when the baby boomers' biggest problem, I think, is disability. In fact, there are things worse than death, and some types of disability fall into that category. They've already done a study in 2014 and determined that in California, the average cost of long-term care is now $94,000. I would say in almost every case, I recommend that people go get a long-term care insurance consultation just so that they can find out, because that's one of the things that is rapidly changing right now to take care of this increased cost. They are repackaging it, and there are new companies in, and some older companies that used to offer it are now out of California. Things are changing in that field just like many others.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
When your business value is wrapped up in your client list, what's the most important thing you can do to drive the value of your business? We asked expert Stacy McKibben.
If you don't have really strong, you know, client relation management tools, CRMs, as they're lovingly referred to, if you don't have tools like that in your business, it's going to be very difficult to transition it over. As a matter of fact, your next buyer is going to use that as a reason to drive down your sale price. Absolutely, one of the biggest areas of opportunity that we see in professional services businesses are going back to your existing and previous clients. Oftentimes, we just forget that they don't necessarily know the full breadth of services that we provide and how they can use us or even refer us to their friends and family. So that is a big win in most businesses, is just starting there. And it's very difficult to do if you don't have a good system in place with which to do it.
One of the most common ways a business is sold is through something called an earnout. And we asked for information and an example from business broker Chris Bond.
What buyers want to have happen is they want a seller to prove the actual value of the business by having them be patient and waiting for a piece of the payout. So in other words, once the transition period has happened, say 6, 12, 18, or 24 months, the buyer will make additional payments with the comfort that, okay, it is what you said it is. Had a very creative deal earlier this year where down payment was made for about 80% of the deal. A bank stepped in for a percentage of the deal. The seller actually financed another small percentage of the deal. And the earnout comes in years 3, 4, and 5. So everybody's pulling in the same direction, making sure the first 2 years go very smoothly.
What are some of the challenges for leaders in this knowledge-based economy? Here's CEO Coach Bill Anton.
The person that has the most influence over the entire organization is the person that leads the organization. And transforming that person exponentially influences change. My training as a psychologist, my understanding about the kinds of organizations that are going to be successful in the future are going to be organizations that realize that knowledge is their product and that knowledge can only be created by enrollment, not by compliance. And so the task of the leader of the future is to transform the people that work in the organization so that they want to give their best and so that they're willing to offer ideas and perspectives that create knowledge and innovation for the organization.
Medical insurance is a big part of your budget. How do you contain those costs? We ask benefits expert Rhett Bray.
We'll talk about wellness as how we can start to communicate the importance of the wellness and that we give the people and the employees the opportunities to do things that will help them to become healthier. We start to educate them on the importance of annual physicals. We start to educate them on preventative care. Women do this quite well. Men have a tendency to wait till body parts don't work and then they go, which can be late. And it's interesting, we take better care of our car. We change the oil. We see the light, the lamp light comes on, and for a lot of us, we don't do the maintenance that we should do on a regular basis. That will identify a lot of issues that people have that now you can start to address either through medication, through exercise or diet. There are just a few key areas that you can identify that will drive these higher costs.
Okay, so we've heard the term before, treat your business like an investment. It'll be a lot easier to sell down the road. What exactly does that mean? We asked an expert, Don Berzin.
Many of us in the field encourage owners to look at their business as an investment. Some owners understand that concept, but many do not. I mean, for a number of them, they see their business as either a job, a cash machine, a passion, or an extension of who they are. And the term investment sounds a little too removed for them to relate to. And we also let it be known that a business is actually easier to sell when it has a passive ownership. I mean, an owner who is not personally critical to maintaining future cash flows. But let's face it, I mean, one of the last terms that ever come to mind when we think about most entrepreneurs is passive. You know, these people are doers. They make things happen. And sitting on the sidelines is not something that many of them want to do at any stage of their career.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Why would you have a revocable living trust instead of a will? Here's attorney Matt Amaro.
One of the main reasons that you would consider doing a revocable trust versus just having a will is avoiding what we would call a probate process, which is a court proceeding to distribute a family estate, which can be very expensive and legal fees, court fees, and just involves a lot of court involvement that can be pretty painful. So by using a trust, you can get out of that. Now, if your assets aren't high enough, that's one way you may be able to avoid probate without a trust. And the other way is you may have assets that are able to pass to beneficiaries outside of a trust and outside of probate, even if you don't have a trust. But when you have real property, you usually won't be able to avail yourself of those two exceptions to staying out of probate.
How do most people decide it's time to start exit planning, and what's on their mind when they do? Here's Jim Immel.
Long term is really interesting. I use the analogy of the light switch. Sometimes these business owners don't think about it, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they just want to turn the light switch off, and they go from being passionate 100% into the game, and then all of a sudden something starts feeling heavy. Maybe it's a personal situation that's happened, but they literally turn the light switch off. Most of the people that you and I work with, it's more like a dimmer switch. They just don't do it that quick. They do it over time. But what really a lot of them are thinking about is, how do I transition myself out of the leadership position, provide other people opportunity to get into that leadership position, so the business is being prepared to transition from a position of strength and not weakness.
People are nervous about stocks and bonds these days. What's the outlook for income real estate? We asked real estate expert Scott Tamkin.
I'm a firm believer that income property will grow wealth over time. And there are parts of Los Angeles where income property is still affordable. The west side of LA doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but there are parts of LA where there are still opportunities. And I firmly believe that, particularly in some of the outlying areas, the gentrification will continue and people will want to rent in those areas, particularly as public transportation expands. People have some extra money. They're looking to invest in income property. I would say good strategy might be to join up with others who are doing the same. There are some crowdfunding sites that offer some opportunities to do that, but I would be careful just jumping in and talk to an expert in the multifamily business. I think over time it will prove to be lucrative.
Protecting your assets is important, but when you do it is even more important. Here's attorney Harry Barth.
A very important component to understand is that, as with all business deals, asset protection being just one of them, is to be able to settle a proposed claim within reasonable limits. It's very, very difficult to do that if you're in jeopardy of losing your home, losing your business, and losing your life savings. So I think that it's important that asset protection is granular. We look at the various components, we take into consideration all of the goals and objectives of our particular clients. And there's not one size fits all. Every situation is different, every background is different, every family makeup is different, every business transaction is different.
What's the best way to use Twitter and other social media? We asked expert Tim Templeton.
I just had a friend ask me today, I don't really get Twitter. What is the value? And I said, you know, it's two things. It's self-promotion, or business promotion in this case, and it's research. So if you want people to know who you are and what you're doing, and you create content, you create blog content, you want people to see it, one of the best ways to get it out in front of people is to send out an announcement using Twitter. Likewise, if you're trying to find people in your ecosystem, your business, the analysts, the resellers, the potential partners, You can find them by their activity on Twitter. You can interact with them. You can follow them. You can retweet things that they're sending. And you can create a relationship that way, which is a lot easier than it used to be.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. It's always a pleasure to have you with me. And, you know, we try to keep you up to date on a wide variety of topics here at Exit Coach Radio. We know that you're contemplating exiting your business someday. You're looking at succession planning. But one of those key things is keeping up with what's new so that your business is attractive to a potential business buyer, or leaving it in good shape for those that you're leaving the business to if you're doing a family business succession plan. And one of those areas that's very important is technology. And today we're fortunate to have with us Michael Karoff of Karoff Communications. He's been with us before. He's the president of that organization based in San Diego. And we're going to talk about one of his favorite topics, which is websites and SEO that rock. So, Michael, welcome once again. A pleasure to have you with me, and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here.
Always a pleasure. You know, we had a lot of great comments to our last discussion and interview, Michael. And the key here is that there's things that people try to do on their own with technology because they're like, well, I can figure that out. But there's really a science and, more importantly, a changing landscape to what works and what doesn't out there. So we're going to talk about that today. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about who you are, what your career's been all about, and what brought you to this stage of life with Karoff Communications.
Absolutely. Well, this story really started many years ago with Fender Musical Instruments when I produced a magazine for them for the first 8 years called Fender Frontline. And that really trained me in how to use text and graphics to communicate with people and to motivate them. So that parlayed pretty naturally into doing the same thing with websites. And that's why I think my approach is a lot more grounded than many of the people doing it, because it came from a tradition of print that goes back 500 years old. And a lot of the things that work in print and different kinds of advertising also work online. It's just you have to tweak them for the medium, but the principles still exist.
Makes sense. I mean, first is understanding your audience and then crafting your message to tell them kind of what they want to hear, but not give it all away, I guess, and then bring them to whatever it is. Make a phone call in the case of a magazine, or go into a store, or in this case, click on something that leads to a potential, more information or a relationship or a purchase, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So in the big world of online advertising and optimizing, you know, standing out in a sea of sameness, that's the big problem out here. There are various ways that people can get people to take notice of them and then click on whatever their offering is and hopefully lead again towards a relationship or towards a purchase or sale. What are some of the most prevalent ways for that to happen these days?
Well, the way I want to focus on today, because it's such a broad subject, it would take hours to cover it, but is specifically what we call PPC, which stands for pay per click advertising. And of course, as usual, the 800-pound gorilla in the field is Google, so we're going to focus on how they do it. But basically, there's a kind of a misconception that nobody clicks on paid ads. They're going to go to the sort of organic listings that appear. And that's actually a big misconception. There are billions of clicks on the paid ads. And the advantage is that you have much more control over what shows and what happens in your paid ads than you do in your free or organic search listings. And so because of that, you're able to really target more effectively using the paid portion than the free portion. And that's what I want to talk about today, is kind of how that targeting works and how, as a client, you can work with your agency to make it more effective.
Yeah, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. And now, when I think, you know, back, I'm a dinosaur when it comes to technology, but I try to stay current. And I remember, you know, several years ago, there were a variety of different ways, and everybody was like, well, which one works better? And everybody's answer was, well, nobody knows yet. It's it's new. It's all new. We're trying different things. And now we have the benefit of being years in the future here from where we started. And so what you're saying is that pay-per-click has proven itself to be a known winner out there, right? And so a lot of people would say, well, it seems easy. I can do it myself. But you get much better results, from what I understand from you, by working with a professional. So what's the advantage of a pay-per-click professional versus a do-it-yourself approach?
Absolutely. There are several, but the main thing is that it has gotten so complicated with what you can do. And it's like saying, well, why should I go to a financial professional to manage my investments? I can just go to E-Trade. Yeah, you can. You can go and you can easily throw out your money, but because you don't have the experience and know the entire process, you're not going to do nearly as well as a professional. And it's the same situation in pay-per-click. The things that we can control, how the ad appears, where the ad appears, on what devices, what time, what keywords are used to find it, and then things about the people looking at the ads, their age, their gender, their household income. There are so many pieces of data that can factor into how the program works that unless you're an expert, you can't possibly know what they are, let alone how best to utilize them. And that's where it comes in that we often are somewhat at odds with clients, and we have to educate them in the sense that they want to control it. Well, show me how it works. I want to tell you what should be in the ad. I want to tell you what the keyword should be. It doesn't work that way. We look at it from a purely data-driven point of view, and so we're able to dispassionately stand back and use the system and the power of the system to provide the best results. But if you try to come in from the outside and poke at a little piece of it, again, to go back to the analogy with the investments, it's like you hired an investment professional and then you said, well, I don't think we're invested in enough steel companies. I want to buy steel companies.
Mm-hmm.
But you're jumping into an entire system that's an interlocking algorithm, and you're just taking one piece of it and saying, I want to tweak this. And so you throw the whole process off. And that's what we've been seeing and trying to educate our clients into trusting that, to look at the end product, not the methodology so much. Look at your sales results and the improvement in what's happening on your end, instead of saying we want to jump in and get involved in the process.
Well, and I think you're hitting on something very important, and that is that, you know, we've all heard of the pace of change, the acceleration of the pace of change in areas, especially technology. Well, in this particular instance, think of all of the changes that have happened that have allowed for pinpoint laser-like adaptation to, you know, who exactly, like you said, you clicked off very easily maybe 10 different demographic or psychographic or other types of measurements of who you're going after, and that's all been changing on a you know, call it a weekly basis for many years now. So the the opportunity, people have been sorted into many more marketing stratifications or bins, if you will, than ever before. And so you can really pinpoint that. But if I was a mechanic and I was used to working on 1972 Chevys and all of a sudden a Tesla rolls in, I've got a whole different world in front of me.
Good analogy, Bill. I like that one. Can I steal it?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you've got that going, and so you're, you know, people like yourself are in that world. You keep up with it. People like me, I walk into Best Buy every 6 months just to see what the new refrigerators can do that the old ones couldn't do. You know, that kind of thing. It's like we're catching it every so often, but it's changing, and it's if you're not keeping up with that stratification, you're really running behind. So what can clients expect from pay-per-click, things like Google Ads?
They can expect two things, and this is I think is something we try to explain to people in the beginning of what to expect. As you say, one thing is that there is no magic bullet. The best thing they can get is a slow, steady improvement in the results, whether that means more inquiries leading to more sales, more customer retention, whatever the metrics we're looking at, they're going to slowly increase over time. That's one thing. The other thing is that pay-per-click, like any other marketing strategy, doesn't live in a vacuum. It's just one portion of an entire program. And the best thing clients can do for us is keep us up to date on the other things they're doing. Are they doing email campaigns? Did they do a new brochure? Did they go to a trade show? Let us know so that we can work that into our calculations and work with them to enhance both sides, the pay-per-click and the offline marketing they're doing.
Yeah, really good point, integrating with what else they're doing. I would imagine your kind of getting to know a client checklist has gotten much longer over the years. You know, the other thing is that is it important to have many messages based on your many potential markets out there?
That actually brings up an interesting point. We're always trying to balance, as you say, tailoring, let's say, messages to different people to spreading ourselves too thin and splitting apart too much. It's one of the dangers in especially pay-per-click. Yes, you can reach, you know, a huge amount of markets, but if you put a small enough amount of resources into each one, none of them are going to work. So what we try to do is calculate how many different segments can we reach based on the market conditions and the client's budget. And sometimes you just pick one or two and say we have to pick the most important ones and start there and build it up.
Yeah, let's go deep on this one. And back to product metrics, I mean, generally the best advice is go deep with one product before you introduce a new product. So I guess that would also come out in this marketing strategy. But the other area that I think about a lot is that, you know, it used to be you put out, like you said, you know, one magazine ad. You didn't have six different ads for to try to, you know, if it was one particular magazine. You didn't have five different ads in the yellow pages. You tried to tailor it to reach the broad market, the general market. Broad in radio, the term was broadcasting, and now the topic is, or now the strategy is narrowcasting, or trying to figure out, you know, who's your market, who's your marketplace, what's your topic, and who does it really relate to. And sometimes you need to do a couple of different campaigns to catch those different target but pinpointed marketplaces, right?
Yeah, and sometimes it's very frustrating for clients because they may have 10 things they want to address, and you said, look, your budget allows for two. Let's pick the most important ones. And that kind of leaving things off the table is very challenging. I'm sure you appreciate, as business owners do I, how difficult that is when there's something you want to get out there and you can't because of resources.
Right, right. And yeah, typically you would say, well, let's just spread it, you know, try to catch different marketplaces. And what I hear you saying is that, you know, if you're missing the point, if you're trying to go back to the yellow pages era and just spread your message across all marketplaces, you're going to probably fail, especially consumers are being more and more conditioned to respond to messages that are crafted for them in particular, so consumers are getting more savvy too. What are the biggest mistakes that you see clients making with pay-per-click?
As I said previously, and this bears repeating because it's so important, they try to control the process. And unfortunately, they're just looking at a tiny little sliver of a big process, and they usually throw it off. What we generally tell them is, we can do what you want, but it's going to make your results worse. And so what we try to get them to do is, again, step back, and instead of focusing on the trees, look at the forest and say, more important than what the ad says that you're seeing on your screen is, how is it affecting your results? Are you seeing month over month more inquiries? Are you seeing a better class of potential clients coming in? If that's happening, then the program is working. Don't worry so much about how it's working. Let us worry about that. Worry about that it is working.
Very good. Very good. So, you know, one of the best ways, Michael, to illustrate to listeners what you mean by that is maybe to tell us a quick story about a client that you've worked with and where they were before you came in, and maybe what you recommended and what the results have been.
Absolutely. And actually, the client I'm going to use is my own company in this, because I can reveal things about strategies that I might not for other clients. But when Google was first bringing in extended criteria that you could use to target people, one of them was day of week and time of day. So, for instance, you can give your bids a little bit more oomph on certain days or even times of day. And we did some testing and research and found out that we got the best results Tuesdays and Thursdays from noon to 4 p.m. Now, Bill, you could pay me as much as you wanted, and I could not tell you why that worked. But it doesn't matter. What matters is that the day that was telling us that, so we weight our ads so that they have more showing power and presence during those times, and we see the benefit of it. And that's an exact example of something that is clearly not intuitive to almost anyone, and yet it works. And that's just one piece of the whole Google puzzle.
That's fascinating. And you learned that by doing a lot of testing and checking, right? I mean, this wasn't just, you don't just choose that. Now, in Las Vegas, Michael, they know that they make the biggest sounding, the noisiest slot machine go off near the buffet line when everybody's standing in the buffet line. So this is not, you know, you're applying the Vegas buffet principle here.
Absolutely. It's not accidental.
It's not accidental, but it takes a lot of work and research to figure that out in the first place, I would imagine.
Well, the good thing is that Google's system will do a lot of the heavy lifting for you if you allow it. If you work with the process, that's going to show you. You just need to understand it and trust it.
That's great. It's a great point. And, you know, that, again, comes back to the point of working with people who are in the know, who really study this. And Michael, that's where you come in. Could you give our listeners some brief tips, ideas, or precautions before we part ways today?
Absolutely. So when you're working with pay-per-click, you want to avoid a couple of things. One thing is hiring an agency that uses a very broad-based term like, we can get you on the first page. Anyone can get you on the first page. You know, it's just a matter of money. What you should be looking for is somebody that says, we're going to look at your current sales results and you know, your product numbers, and we're going to improve them over time. And the other thing is, I caution people against going in with too low of a budget. This is something we see on a fairly regular basis. Well, what can I get for, you know, $350 a month?
Right.
And I always say, save your money, you know, hold on, wait until you have a better budget, then we will tell you what we think a recommended range is. Wait until you get there. And I have told a number of potential clients, don't hire us. until you're ready to spend the budget. Even though you would come in and pay us, it's the same to us whether you spend $200,000 or, you know, $20,000, but it's not going to work for you. So hang on until you can hit a budget that's going to give you results. Otherwise, you're just throwing good money after bad.
Great, great tips, great information. Michael, you and I are both in a networking group called Provisors, a professional networking group that's, I don't know, but what, 40,000 strong here in Southern California. And I always hear great comments from people that have worked with you. And that goes a long way in my book. So what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you? And I understand you have a very explanatory and helpful blog. So how do they get to that?
Yeah, the website is the best way. It contains all the contact information. It's www.caroff.com. And yes, we, because of the issues I've talked about during our discussion here, we've started to craft a number of articles, mostly in our blog, that actually will explain on a, you know, sort of a understandable basis how some of these things work and what you should look for so that you can be more educated if and when you work with us or anyone.
I love it. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I walk away with a page full of notes and a lot of great information that I can use, and I hope our listeners will get in touch with you, Michael. And once again, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Bill. You're a scholar and a gentleman.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's you know, a real pleasure to have you with me. And my next guest is going to talk to you about something that's on a lot of your minds. His name is Jim Muehlhausen, and he is the founder of a company called Half Retire. You heard that right, Half Retire. Company's based in Indianapolis. And we're going to talk about how to keep your business income but ditch the stress of running your business via this strategy called Half Retire. So, Jim, thank you so much for joining me today. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. So before we get into this concept, and it's a fascinating concept, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners should probably be getting a pen and a notepad right about now to take some good notes. Jim, tell us about your background and how you got into this business.
Yeah, so I'm one of those guys that grew up with a family business, and you know, shirt sleeves in three generations. So through the course of owning a lot of businesses, I ended up in the peer group business. And have worked with a lot of clients. In fact, I counted at one point, I've had 10,000 one-on-one live meetings with clients. And when you do that many sessions, you start to see patterns. And so I've owned a manufacturing company. I actually bought some Meineke franchises while I was in law school. I have an accounting background by education. But I'm a entrepreneur. I'm a business guy. And I think like a business owner, and in doing so, you start to see that there was this pattern, and I started to see it about 10 years ago, and that was all these people were turning 65, they were supposed to be selling their businesses, and they weren't doing it. And I said that it kind of threw the exit community on its head a little bit, and you start going, well, I wonder why that is. I'm not really an exit guy. I'm a business coach. Why are people not retiring? And I found that there was a couple of reasons. I think the first is that baby boomers really don't want to get the gold watch and go play golf every day, that they like staying active. Their business is a great way to do that. They really didn't have an interest in doing what our parents considered retirement. They wanted something different. And that was a smaller percentage. The big percentage of what I saw in businesses, let's call them businesses under $20 million in revenue, was that these people could not afford to retire. Common example, you've got someone owns a business. They make $300,000 a year from the business. They've got a company car. They've got all the perks that go with it. And they've built themselves a nice life. Maybe not in Southern California, but here in Indianapolis, $300,000 goes a lot further. Let's call it $500,000 in your neck of the woods. But a nice livelihood, right? And so they eventually go, well, gee, I should sell this thing. I wonder what it's worth. And then they go get a $1 million valuation or a $700,000 valuation. And they start running the math and they go, I don't like that very much. The numbers don't work. I literally cannot afford to retire if I'd like to live the life that I have grown accustomed to living. And that's a big percentage of small business owners, at least the ones that I was seeing. And so you started to think about, well, what's the way out of this box? I'm sure you see it all the time, too. You know, how do you get out of this unsolvable problem? You can't really sell it. At some point, your health gives out. You can't keep running as hard as you ran at 50 when you're 70. I mean, I even talked to 80-year-olds that are still trying to run full blast. And so what we did was come up with best practices that business owners were using, concepts that we already knew work, and kind of formulate them into this thing called Half Retire with several goals, but the big goal being financial, and that is, how do I keep the equity income from the business? You know, if I own Google stock, I make money off of owning Google stock. They don't pay a dividend, but let's say I owned one that did own the dividend. I get paid just to be the owner. I don't need to show up in Cupertino and say, what's the work I need to do today? I just get paid to be an owner. How do I shift from having to show up every day in my business and having things kind of fall apart on me? If I don't show up, you earned income, or as we like to call it, hard-earned income, to equity income. And that's what Half Retirement's designed to do, is shift from hard-earned income to equity income, get paid to own the business, and reduce your work, but not get rid of it. Do the work you like, get rid of the work you don't like, and then keep that $300,000 or whatever the magic number is to you as your reward for all that hard work you've put in building the business.
Great. Great points, and you're preaching to the choir here. The statistics are that a business owner that goes to a business broker has about a 1 in 10 chance that they're going to sell their business these days, and for some of the reasons that you outlined is, you know, they're, first of all, it's not their job. It's something that they built, and they built it to suit themselves, and they may not enjoy all of it, but they enjoy a lot of it. They enjoy what they've built, and there's parts of it that they really enjoy. And second is, like you said, if you sell your business, a lot of businesses are better as an income asset than as a hard asset, especially after taxes and low investment yields, if at all, in the market these days. Very difficult to make that kind of income. And I think another area that you said is retirement just isn't as much fun as people crack it up to be, for some people will say, you know, I have grandkids, I have family, I have a lot of that. But a lot of people don't have that. They don't have a hobby even because they've been so busy working on their business. So what are the basic premises and tools of Half Retirement?
Yeah, so we set about creating, you know, what's the process, right? You know, I was in manufacturing, so I like process in my family business. We made springs, you know, that was manufacturing as well. Mm-hmm. And so I always want to figure out, okay, what's the formula, right? People always want to know what's next. Business owners are very action-oriented. What do I do next? So we have this six-step process, and I'm going to focus on the second step because it surprised me as we're writing a book on this as we speak. It's about half written. And I've been a little bit surprised because I always figured it was going to be about what do you do to remove yourself as the key gear in this machine. I thought that was going to be the process, and I was wrong. It turns out that there's a step before that. That's a big piece. We call it the Jenga piece. And I'll tell you the Jenga test real quick. If you've ever played the game Jenga with the wood pieces,
yep. Yeah.
You ever pushed on a piece in the middle and like the whole tower spun on you, or that, you know, you thought it would move and that piece was really, really stuck. And you realized if you tried to push that piece out, that whole sucker was going over. Well, in our world, we call that piece you, that you are that stuck Jenga piece, and we've got to get that thing out of there without tipping the tower over. But if you play Jenga, you know that you can move other pieces around, shift the way the business runs, and all of a sudden that stuck piece gets unstuck. That's what we do. We figure out how to get you unstuck from the operations of your business. But before that, we have to work on your mindsets. We have a big list of what we call a mindset remapping. So, for instance, there's a little saying that we like to use. We say, you can get things done the way you like them done, or you can half retire.
Mm-hmm.
That is very difficult. It sounds like you've met a lot of business owners. You know how difficult that can be, right? I want it done like this. You have to be pragmatic, is the short version.
Right.
And learn that good enough is good enough for some things. It's not good enough when you're operating on my knee. I'd like perfection. But on some things, good enough is good enough, because if you have to have it done exactly the way that you want, how you want, when you want, you know what that's called? Stay at your desk for 50 hours a week.
Yes. Right. Exactly. And in many cases, the owners would be very happy if they could get the work at least good enough is good enough to 80 or 90%, and then they could finish it, right? Is that part of the precept or the concept too?
Could be. You're kind of alluding to a key concept that we call the Picasso work. If you think about selling a painting for $1 million, okay, and I know Picasso's dead, so he's not going to be painting much these days. But if you wanted to sell a Picasso painting for $1 million, there's a whole bunch of things that need to happen, right? What's going to get painted, finding the paint, mixing the paint, stretching the canvas, selling it, all of that. But only one thing has to be done by Picasso in order for that system to work, and that is touch the brush to the canvas. That's what makes it a Picasso. And business owners have their Picasso work, the stuff that really is worth $1,000 or $5,000 an hour, the stuff that it just won't work, no one else can do it, et cetera. But what we do as human beings is we bundle. There's this piece of the work that really is Picasso work. It's undelegable, and no one can or should do it for you. But then we bundle 38 other things with it and call it that no one else can help me. But they could help you on 35 out of the 38 steps. And usually you can't figure it out yourself. It takes somebody else figuring it out with you or for you. But once you break your work down to that Picasso work, now you've just figured out how you can be there 10 hours a week instead of 50.
Excellent. Excellent. That gives you back what most people are looking for, which is a time to take a breath, maybe time to work more on the things they love in the business if they can get less, you know, get away from the things that they hate, right? Now, that's a big part of it is quality of life. And I find that a lot of owners really enjoy if they can take time off and relax but stay in the game. Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, so we work with a lot of people in construction, for instance, and a common complaint in that world is the estimating or the quoting or, you know, putting the whole package together, if you will. And every single one of them, the first time they talk to us, is like, well, no one else can do it. And they're probably right. No one else can do it the way that it is currently. But as you get into it and break it down, we have a process we call Fever that we use for breaking this stuff down. We do it through the lens of the Picasso work, and you start figuring out, okay, what is the special genius that you bring to this? You know, you didn't come out of the womb knowing how to do this. You learned, which means somebody else probably can too. Maybe they're not in the building. Maybe they are. But how can we fractionalize this? We call it fractionalization. How do you fractionalize this and get it so it's not so dependent on you that you can get some help? It's never as simple as delegation. It's never just you do it instead of me. That's about 10%. Everybody thinks it's 100. It's about 10% of the process is delegation. Sometimes you just choose not to do it. You know, I had a big construction client in Pennsylvania that we just decided to stop quoting a certain type of work because once we got into it, he realized that it was taking a bunch of time. He was almost never winning, and we just came up with a template that we sent these people and said, hey, if you want to learn more, let us know.
Okay. So in situations like that, I mean, and you're hitting on an important topic, I think, that I find is very important, that business owners find themselves doing a lot of everything instead of a little bit of something. And as they move towards that, like you said, they need to fractionalize, break it down, create a process that someone else can follow easily, and then hopefully, you know, the work gets done through a checklist type of a situation, a kind of a check-it business instead of a do-it business, if you will. Along the way, they also, of course, if they plan to stay and keep ownership of the business, they need to still have a plan for what happens if anything happens. How do you address that?
Yeah, we leave that more to the exit planner. Some of that's legal, right? You know, we don't focus on the legal. We actually work with a lot of the exit community or financial planners because that's not what we do. What we do for those people is help maintain the assets or increase the, you know, we've got a spreadsheet that everybody can download on our half retire website called the 44% rule that will show you just how much it's worth to half retire. It's almost always worth several million dollars to half retire versus if you don't have a sellable business, right? If you can sell it for a 12 multiple, get a big pile of money, good for you. But a lot of people can't. And if you can't, this is a great additional option. It, to me, it's a new option that hasn't been out there in the exit world. You know, but back to what you were saying, step five in our process is we call it set the autopilot. And that would be – so that's everything from running your business from a quick and easy dashboard, having flash meetings instead of regular meetings, and having a way to maintain control of that business, in particular financial control, without having to be there managing with your eyeballs 50 hours a week.
Right, right. Which is exactly what most people want to get away from is being on site all the time. Now, do you find this works with family businesses?
Oh, we have a ton of family businesses, yeah. I grew up with one. I get it. You know, we had that Hatfields and McCoys thing going on in ours, just like a lot of them do. yeah, it's just trickier, right? You know, firing your brother is no fun sometimes. Or you know, the one that we get a lot in family business that's really surprised me is my kids aren't capable of running the business. Hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. Or my kids don't want it.
mm-hmm. And sometimes nobody asks the kids what their outlook is on it too. I find that there's a lot of assumptions built into that. You know, I went into a business owner's office, a car dealership actually, and behind him on the wall was a giant screen TV, and he had it bifurcated into nine different screens, and each one showed him either a number or a video feed of something that was happening within his business, with you know, with it on the lot, you know, what either sales calls happening or problems or looking at the bay to make sure workers were working. And I thought, now that guy's got a great system. He's got this dashboard system. Let's talk a little bit more about the dashboard system, because I think not enough people pay attention to that and how that can help you really be a part-time owner, if you will.
Yeah, it's really important, and I kind of learned it from a friend of mine. I had a friend that was the CFO of a company that eventually got bought by Manpower, and they were funded by a VC in Chicago that had funded Blockbuster, so very sophisticated, successful venture capitalist. And once a month, he and two or three other executives were summoned to Chicago, and they all got 15 minutes apiece to say, here's the five KPIs. And in his case, it was, you know, average billable per hour and utilization percentage. And, you know, you could probably guess what they were. But the point was, he was grilled on these. If they were green light, they moved on. If it was yellow or red, and his job was to keep them abreast of all those KPIs, address the problems, fix the problems, et cetera. And all of a sudden, it just hit me over the head. And I said, these guys in Chicago are running this business that's in Milwaukee. In a couple of hours a month. And you go, that is pretty cool how they are doing that. That the people that were theoretically the CEO, the CFO, the COO were really just, to some extent, the puppets of the guys in Chicago. And you go, that's the way we need to do it.
That's beautiful. That's exactly what a lot of people would need. You know, red light, yellow light, green light, and you know what to focus on and what's working well. Jim, your process now, is this something that, how do business owners go through the whole process? I know how they can go to your website to learn more about it. Do they go through it on their own with your help, with a coach's help? How does it work?
Both. Yeah. So we have I'll call it a do-it-yourself program that is primarily education. That is a $100 a month program. You'll see that on the main page of the website. And so it's got a robust learning management system, an online training portal that is a step-by-step process, just like everybody would like it. You know, with the green check marks as you finish each lesson, the worksheets, the exercises, all the to-dos is there. We also augment that same training program with one-on-one coaching. We've got a private group of other business owners that are half retiring around the country, and I guess around the world, most are in North America at this point. But all, you know, the Facebook group, all that stuff that you would throw in as well for people that want to do it more with other people than on their own. But we do offer both.
Excellent. Excellent. And so it sounds to me like you said, there's a lot of people that focus on the overall exit plan out there these days. There's a lot of professionals, and some of them are CPAs and attorneys and financial planners that say, I want to help owners develop their exit plan. But this is a piece that they can that is missing in a lot of cases that owners are looking for. And so I think you've really hit on something here. I'm really excited for our listeners to learn about it and to also know, you know, how long do they stay in it? As long as it takes? They just keep seeing improvements, and is there a length of time that they expect to, after which time they kind of graduate?
Yeah, very good question. I think you graduate when you want to graduate, because it's a moving bar. I mean, I always talk to people and say, man, if I could just get back to 40 hours a week, I'd be so happy. And then they get to 40 hours a week and they go, you know, if I could get to 30 hours a week, I'd be even happier.
Yeah.
And so they'll move the bar, which is great, right? I mean, we have a Hall of Fame. We call it the Half-Retire Hall of Fame. The current leader at the Half-Retire Hall of Fame did not set foot in his business for 2.5 years. and made a very enviable income. I won't say what it was, but we would all be happy with how much he made. So you can, you know, you can set the bar very, very high. I've got a lot of people that really just want the chaos and the stress to end. If you had to be, you know, brutally transparent.
Yeah, and in the world of exit planning, it's been said many times that, you know, you have to examine your business value and your business offers. And oftentimes what business owners are looking at is, you know, if I could just keep my business for 3 or 4 years and be able to harvest the money and put it in the bank, in 3 or 4 years, I'll have the money I would have gotten from selling the business, but I'll still have the business. And if I can go into this type of a program and not have to work so hard at keeping the business, hell, at the end of that 3 or 4 years, I could give the business away and be ahead of selling it today. That's the real world situation that a lot of owners are looking at, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm even going to throw a cherry on top in that if you do the work in our program and you make the positive changes that are there, your business now becomes less dependent upon you. And that is an easier to sell business, and you probably will sell it for more on top of it. So not only will you get that income for the 3 years, but the business will be more valuable in 3 years than it is today.
Excellent point. Excellent point. And that's, of course, something that everybody strives for, is working on making their business more valuable, more sustainable, more transferable at some point. Could you leave us, our listeners, with three brief tips, ideas, or precautions on things that you see that they should be working on a regular, routinely, that you see out there?
Yeah, the first one would be, and I always challenge people at my speeches or my webinars, of either half retirement or something along those lines makes sense or it does not make sense. And for a lot of business owners, for all the things we've been talking about, it makes sense. But the time to decide whether it makes sense is sooner rather than later, because if you think of it as, say, a fork in the road, one of my big frustrations is I see business owners where it makes a lot of sense, and then they're so busy doing the doing that they just effectively procrastinate. There's no other word for it. And then I get an email from them a year later, and they go, boy, I sure wish I would have started the first time that I talked to you. And it's like, exactly. It's not backbreaking. You know, back to what you said before, we tell people, if you can't find 5 extra hours in the first month, you're not doing something right. You know, call us. We will help you. There is 5 hours to find in the very first month. And then you can re-leverage that to positive snowball and get even more hours back. You know, we've got obviously some really terrific success stories of what people have accomplished in 3 months. But how much you accomplish is going to be dependent on the business, right? If it runs pretty clean, then it'll go faster than if it's a train wreck and everything revolves around you. And you haven't taken a vacation in 5 years because you know it'll fall apart. That's not going to happen in 3 months. It'll take longer to unwind. The second point would be, you know, please take advantage of the free resources we've got. We've got a great blueprint that you can download. Lots of free stuff on our website. Take advantage of the webinars that we do or the short course that we have. All this stuff is free because, you know, our job is helping business owners bridge this gap that they've got. And then the third thing is you need to be prepared if you want to do something like this to be willing to change the way you run your business. You know, it really can be flipping a light switch. Some of these success stories that are like, holy cow, you know, would blow the top of your head off with excitement are about people that really quickly realize that the mindset that helped them get their business from A to B is not the one that will help them retire. We talk about shifting from growth to harvest. If your business is an apple orchard, those trees are already grown. It's time to just pick up the fruit, not worry about fertilizing and all the things that we do. And that's a shift of mindset. And if you're not prepared to really look at how you do everything, look at your business model. One of the books I wrote was Business Models for Dummies for Wiley. And it's come in handy with this. It surprised me. I thought it would not play, but it does. Sometimes you really need to look at your business model, because your business model is built on you at the center of everything. And if you don't fix that, you're never going to see Europe.
Well, that's a great point, and one I wanted to bring home to our listeners is that if you think your business is so dysfunctional or so special that it can't adapt to something like this, that's all on you because you built it that way. And it's time to take some action. You know, we've always said here, exit planning and succession planning, all this stuff, this transition doesn't happen overnight. What you need to do is adopt some tools and strategies and a new mindset, and this is a great way to do it. And, Jim, I'm going to tell our listeners that they can go to halfretire.com, but there's also a special website behind that where they can get right to your blueprint. Is it okay to give out that URL?
Absolutely.
As well?
Absolutely, sure. Yeah, feel
okay.
free to give them that, and then they'll get in our loop, and they'll get offered the webinar, et cetera.
Okay, so grab your pen. Here you go. It's go.halfretire.com/blueprint. So I'm going to give that to you one more time, listeners. go.halfretire.com/blueprint. You have absolutely nothing to lose and no obligation to go look at that. Why wouldn't you? That should be the next thing you do right after hearing this episode, and I hope you will. And Jim, we are just scratching the surface of this exciting concept that you've developed, and I would hope that we can have you back on and talk about in depth a little bit more about some of these things and help our listeners really get the idea that they can find a solution using this process, and I really appreciate you coming on and sharing it with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Bill, and it's always great to talk about these important topics to the right audience, so thanks again.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us.
Hey, everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on exitcoachradio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.